You're listening to episode 93 of the Mark and Russia podcast, and I'm Mark.
You're listening to the Mark and Russia podcast, broadcasting from the belly of the bear in Chelyabinsk, Russia. Kick back and enjoy the show. Don't be a pussy.
A while back, I decided every week I'm going to issue a new podcast, and I was really good about it for several months. And now it's been actually 3 months since I put up a new podcast, at least a Mark and Russia podcast. Just been busy with very many projects, all broadcast related, but I'm really sorry for those of you that like to see something new come up. Sorry that I haven't done it, and I will really, really try to do better now. Part of the problem, well, I've got different projects that I'm starting off the ground having to do with broadcasts, and this does take up quite a bit of time, but a lot of it just boils down to topics. Now, there's no shortage of topics, but what I find is that every time I think of a topic I want to discuss, it's a United States politics, political topic, because the country's basically falling apart right now. It's incredible. For those of you that follow the news, for any Americans that listen to this, the fact that you're listening to this tells me that you're reasonably intelligent anyhow, so you understand what's happening. But to the 49% of the people there that are collecting some sort of government check and don't give a shit, well, it is falling apart, and it just gets worse. And with the poser president there, Obama, it just makes it absolutely impossible to keep up and talk about the things he's doing. So I'm not going to even talk about what he's doing. Today I'm just going to talk about some different things I've read about Russian news and talk about that a little bit. Now here there's some French actor I recall, Depardieu or something. I don't know what the hell his name is. If you're Russian, you know who he is. I guess his films were very popular in Russia, but I kind of suspected his films were popular in Russia back when, at the beginning of Russia recently, in other words, the beginning of the 1990s, after the end of the Soviet Union, and they're happy to get any kind of foreign film that they could. His people, this dude is French, he's made quite a few films, people liked him a lot, but frankly, I don't see any French films to speak of on TV anymore, so I guess they have a much better selection to pick from. But this guy, he decided because of the French president deciding to tax wealthy people in France 70% or something, and I'm no socialist, I think the French president, he's worse than Obama in many ways, just maybe not his evil intention, but he's a socialist. So I don't blame this guy for wanting to leave France, but anyhow, he chose Russia, and Russia used it as some sort of a public relations coup, and he was given a big apartment in Chechnya, if you can believe it, in Grozny, the capital. This is the place that was destroyed by Russian Air Force back in the 1990s. And the leader of Chechnya is I don't know what to describe him. He's just a mobster, former terrorist, now legitimate mobster. This guy, Depardieu, or whatever his name is, he's good friends with him. So this guy was given a new apartment there. And this is in an area where many people don't have houses, or they wait years to get one. This jackass comes along and gets one right away. So for all the people that used to like this guy as an actor, they don't really like his behavior. I guess he's pretty much a drunk all the time, which won't make him fit well in Chechnya, but what can you say? Anyhow, he was he recently did a movie where he was playing the part of the demonic priest Rasputin. And I just want to read a little bit about the reviews that this film got. First, I want to tell you that when he was going to play the role of Rasputin, I remember the president, Vladimir Putin, cited Depardieu's Rasputin role as a cultural contribution that justified giving him citizenship. Now, listen to what he said. He said, "This is a work that is related to all of Russia's cinema, to Russian culture as a whole, and therefore I think this decision is justified," Putin said in April. Depardieu revealed that he even gave Putin the script to read. So this wasn't Putin's thought. It was this narcissist's thought. Okay, I'm just going to read it. It was the movie role that won Gerard Depardieu a Russian passport, but the actor's turn as the demonic priest Rasputin, who mesmerized the Tsar's family, had a critical mauling in Russia. A quote. "He doesn't succeed in playing the Siberian elder as infernal, nor does he manage to be comic," wrote the news website Gazeta.ru. For Russian Time Out, "Rasputin is so bad, it's better to imagine it was a hallucination." Depardieu takes the title role on Rasputin, a film featuring Russian and French actors, depicting the life and death of the mysterious priest who gained the trust of the last Tsar, Nicholas II. We already read the thing about what Vladimir Putin said about him. The actor told Izvestia Daily in an interview published Friday, "I felt very close to Rasputin in my link to the spiritual world." Anyhow, while Depardieu is well-loved in Russia, his swift acquisition of citizenship and apartments in Grozny and provincial town of Saransk have prompted much mirth and cynicism. His Rasputin act has done little to diminish that. True newspaper called the film a comic strip in costume. The French Rasputin isn't memorable for any new shades of demonism, nor for any real saintliness his followers believed in, but more because of the curious shape of his nose, wrote Commerçant Daily. And just because this is radio, and now I will put up a picture of this dude, you know, but he's got this huge, huge nose. Depardieu did not show up for the premiere in Moscow. Gazeta.ru news website took a satirical look at Depardieu's brief burst of interest in Russia, noting that he has apparently understood everything about the mysterious Russian soul and has moved to Belgium. It compared Rasputin and Depardieu, writing that it could be said of both that there was talent there, but the devil led him astray. I thought that was pretty good. Anyhow, here's our next story. This is about what they're calling the Murmansk 30. These are a group of Greenpeace activists who were arrested as they tried climbing up a Russian oil rig, and it's not the first time. And then FSB, some forces, moved onto the boat and arrested everybody on the boat. So now we get to hear about, the title says Sydney activists, because these people are from all different countries on this Greenpeace boat. Sydney activist writes letter about prison coma in Russian jail. This is such a joke, okay? This 27-year-old Sydney resident and Greenpeace activist who remains locked in a Russian jail has written of tapping on the wall of her cell to communicate with fellow prisoner Camila Special to relieve her loneliness. Trying to compare herself to a very famous story called Prison Coma. These people have been in jail, I think, for 25 days. It's incredible. Anyhow, I went to court for my appeal on Friday. I knew it was going to be rejected like the others, but when the judge said those words, I couldn't help getting upset. Okay. It was a reminder of the injustice the 30 of us have faced. I keep going over the events leading up to our imprisonment in my head. I can't fathom how this has happened. We peacefully protested against an oil platform, which has a notorious safety record, like its owner Gazprom, that's set to produce the world's first Arctic oil. Producing such oil has been described by Russian scientists as harder than going to outer space. On the day of the action, our activists were threatened with gunshots and knives. We were illegally boarded by the FSB in international waters. This is crazy. I'm sure that maybe a lot of you believe in that Greenpeace is just a wonderful organization. Maybe they do a few things okay, but they're anarchists, period. Anarchists. They were just peaceful, peacefully protesting this oil platform. This is a huge oil platform located in the Arctic Sea. A peaceful protest is what? Throwing ropes up to it, climbing up to take it over and unfurl your banners? And in terms of it was a dangerous thing that had problems in the past, the thing has never pumped oil yet. It's still being built. So right now, anyhow, the world, the Western world that looks at Russia and these 30 poor little Greenpeace people in Russian jails for the last 25 days. Hey, and I don't want to, spend 25 days in a Russian jail either, but they broke the law. They trespass. They trespass where they shouldn't have been. They seem to think they can get away with almost anything, whether it be whatever, harassing ships, doing anything they want, that they're always right. And they are. They're just anarchists. They're fascists. So I don't pity these people a lot because they're sitting in jail. They knew what they were doing is wrong. And now it's boo-hoo, we're in jail. Who cares? But first of all, again, it's all Russia, okay? It's all Russia. Now let me just read a little bit more. It's so absurd that it would be funny if it wasn't so serious, however hard it is for me to accept. I have to stop worrying about what may happen and trust justice will be served. It snows every day in Murmansk now. The snow, tangled in the barbed wire on the roofs, makes the place look strangely romantic. When I go outside, my toes go numb, and the falling snowflakes on my face awaken me from my prison coma. I dream of the outside world a lot. When I wake, I'm sleeping with steel bars digging into my back, facing the same four green walls I faced for 25 days. That's the hardest time of the day. Despite everything that has happened, I don't hate Russia. I just want to go home. Maybe you don't hate Russia, maybe you do, but I think most Russians probably hate you. And your big 25 days in jail, you broke the law, you climbed up, you trespassed, you went someplace where you definitely shouldn't be. And I'm quite sure if this were in the Gulf of Mexico in the United States, you wouldn't have been treated really well either. Not if it were my oil platform, you wouldn't have been. But as the rest of the world is judging Russia on the fact that these 30 anarchists are being held after breaking laws, we kind of forget about something. This organization Greenpeace has been around for a long, long time, and they've made trouble for a long time. And again, I'm not saying everything is bad about them, and I'm not saying everybody that supports them is bad, but I'm saying that overall, they're not a good organization. It's a bunch of anarchists with a boat. So we talk about the 30 of them that have been arrested and sitting in a Russian jail right now awaiting their court date. I'm going to mention something that probably most from the West don't even remember, even though it didn't happen that long ago. In 1985, specifically July 10th, 1985, French Special Services snuck aboard, went the Rainbow Warrior, the Greenpeace ship, as it was docked in New Zealand. And anyhow, they planted explosives. I believe they planted them from the outside, so that must have been a scuba-type thing. And what happened is they had two different explosives set to go off. The first one was going to go off, and 10 minutes later, the second one would go off. And it did work that way. But the thing that happened, so they sunk the flagship of the Greenpeace fleet, the Rainbow Warrior, in the port of Auckland, New Zealand. And the reason the French did is they wanted to prevent the ship from interfering with a planned nuclear test they're about to partake in somewhere in the South Pacific. Now, again, I'm not saying that I'm in nuclear testing. There's different ways to do it and everything else. But again, here we get the Rainbow Warrior deciding that they're going to go and interfere with the test, and somehow that test will no longer be done. There was a little problem with their plan, though, the French plan. They expected that the first detonation would happen. It blew a hole in the side of the hull about the size of a car. And then there was a 10-minute space where the second one was expected to go off. And they figured that in that 10 minutes, the people aboard the ship would quickly get off the ship because it's sinking. But that isn't what happened. They started to... The bombs went off, okay, and the crew didn't react to the first explosion as the French agents had expected them to react. Now, the ship was initially evacuated, but some of the crew returned to the ship to investigate and to film the damage. Now, Portuguese Dutch photographer, he returned below decks to fetch his camera equipment, and then at 11:45 p.m., the second bomb went off. This photographer drowned in the rapid flooding that followed, and the other 10 crew members either safely abandoned ship on the order of the captain or were thrown into the water by the second explosion. So there were deaths that resulted in this. I guess what I'm trying to say is this was a lot bigger than Russians arresting and putting in jail, awaiting their trial, 30 members from the Greenpeace ship. And I don't know whether this is called the Rainbow Warrior or what. I have no idea. I don't really care. But it just, most people don't even know that this happened. The French did it. They ended up getting caught. Special operations teams weren't all that great, I guess. Two of the people got caught going through customs with false passports. The French denied for many years this happening, but later on admitted that it was them. So we talked a little bit about Greenpeace, about what's happening right now in Russia with Greenpeace, as opposed to what happened at the hands of the French back in 1985. And 1985 wasn't that long ago. It was 30 years ago, and the French blew up their ship, sunk the ship, killed a couple people on board, and then denied it for many, many years. I guess these people sitting in the non-Murmansk Hilton for 25 days, should probably be happy they weren't on a boat that was bombed by the French. Well, I realize this not scripted at all, and it bounced around from topic to topic with some opinion and everything else, but I just felt like doing a podcast, and maybe you listened to the end. If you did, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I do promise I'm going to try to do what I can to start publishing podcasts on more of a regular basis. And I think one of the ways of doing it is to stay away from the American politics for now, because it just pisses me off. And then as soon as I start studying something and getting something together, some new American crisis hits and negates the old one that I did. So I think I'll go back to just doing some different web series. Ultimately, I'd love to do some things where I'm actually interviewing some Russians who have maybe lived through World War II or fought in World War II, and trying to recording some Russian history since I'm here, because unfortunately these people are getting older and older. They're in their upper 80s and they're in the low 90s. But the fact is, every year, a large percent of the remaining veterans are dying off. And when they die, they take these stories with them. So if you're listening to this podcast, and if you have maybe a family member or somebody you know who I could interview, and I don't mean, I have portable equipment. I would go there. I would bring an interpreter, and I'm just interested in hearing their story. I'm here, and if we do this, I'll also give you, the family or the friend or whomever, WAV file or MP3 file of the entire interview, so you have these stories also to listen to. I think it's really important if you can record some of this history. If you want to do it later by writing it down, that's fine. But if somebody dies without telling all these stories beforehand, the stories are gone. It's as if they never existed, or a big part of what their life was also disappears. So maybe just do it more as a memorial to them before it's actually a memorial. Well, thanks again. I'm going to stop this podcast now and excuse my rambling here, but it's nice to be back, and I hope that you're happy to hear something anyhow, and I'll try very hard to put up a new podcast next week also. Well, until that time, this is Mark and Russia saying goodbye.
You travel around. I'm trying to figure this out. You travel around.
Yeah, I'm having difficulty figuring out exactly what you're here to talk about.
Well, I suffered a career-ending injury, and I'm trying to keep my connection with the sport alive through motivational speaking. I do speeches at schools. They're attendance optional.
Now, I didn't want to say anything, but when you say a career-ending injury, I mean, this is not something that you bring up when you first meet someone, but how would you describe what you're sitting in?
It's a wheelchair.
Yeah. So that's still politically correct to call it a wheelchair.
Yeah, is what it's called.
Really?
What did you hear, David, that we were supposed to call them?
Moving sit-downs. Just because wheelchair is so confining, both literally and
figuratively. Well, also, you don't know, like, if you meet someone who's, like, in one of those, you don't know if it's a rascal and they're just, like, too fat to walk, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to say, hey,
yeah,
nice
I do.
Wheelchair.
It's when they're too fat to walk. Yeah, I know immediately.